Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Sermon Postscript, where we dive into and discuss the Sunday sermon at hand. My name's Eugene, I'm a member of staff here at True North. I'm also with Jay, our senior pastor, who just preached on Judges 11 and the Judge Jephthah.
What's up everybody? Oh, nice chair, I gotta remember not to move my chair.
It's all good, they're used to it by now.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, thanks a lot for preaching on the story of Jephthah. Thank you, Doug, for also reading that passage well.
Man, that passage was a lot longer than I was anticipating.
Yeah, but, you know, you need to tell the whole story. So, yeah. But I was really blessed by the sermon. And, you know, like with every sermon in the Judges, I think as these judges are progressing, they are, I think, kind of uncovering more of our humanity, like, you know, our brokenness and our holiness at the same time. And I really liked your first point, how Jephthah is an unexpected instrument, how you highlighted that a lot of the cultural practices of the time would probably inhibit him to be in leadership, but to God, those things weren't really a matter to him. And I guess one thing I wanted to ask you is, yeah, like for today's times, and you kind of alluded to a little bit, but what are certain characteristics or cultural habits that we still carry that often we might place as, oh, this inhibits you from being a Christian or from being a leader, that probably isn't that biblical or even isn't that God-centered?
Yeah, and I think the obvious one is kind of the socioeconomic standing of a person.
Sure.
And I don't know if it's because of my experience only in kind of like the Asian American middle to upper middle class communities that I've been part of. You know, like every church that I've been at have, you know, either been middle class immigrant families who are, you know, small business owners, and not that they have an easy life, but economically they are middle to upper middle class. Or second gen Asian American, where, you know, like our church, most of the people are white collar, you know, tech industry workers. So I've rarely been in a situation where someone who is not quote unquote successful economically is seen in positions of leadership.
Yeah.
You know, so it's always kind of the doctor who is the elder of the church, a lawyer who's the elder of a church, you know, or someone who is, maybe for immigrant, what I've noticed in the immigrant church, people who have high degrees and or a good pedigree in Korea, but maybe like a painter or a liquor shop store owner in the States, like they are elevated to positions of leadership, you know. Whereas someone who may not have that pedigree back in Korea, or might be just a handyman, and then they're never put in positions of leadership, you know. So that's the obvious one, but I think kind of the more, I don't want to say nefarious, but kind of like the bigger issue is people who don't quote unquote fit the mold of the Christian culture. Sure. You know, like there's a specific church Christian culture that exists, and people who don't fit inside that box will never be invited to the table.
What do you think are, like, because I always notice that too. I think, and every church has a different mold. I think it looks differently. But, you know, maybe at True North, the churches that we've experienced, and like, you know, if I'm going to speak candidly, especially in the Asian American context, which we mainly are, what are certain cultural markers of that? Because I've observed that too. Like, you know, cursing could be one thing. Not that you're like a rampant cursor, but when one person says like a bad word, like, it's like, oh my gosh, like the whole world shuts down, you know? But I guess for you, what are other observations?
Yeah, you know, and these might sound juvenile, but I think for some reason they still kind of hold true. For instance, if someone is a smoker, you know, a cigarette smoking person, then they are automatically, you know, denied any positions of like true leadership.
Sure.
Right. People who may drink. And here's the thing. I think the church has grown a lot in terms of like how they view drinking.
Yeah.
But there's still a certain level of drinking that is acceptable and unacceptable.
Sure.
Right. And I think that will disqualify somebody in a conservative Christian church setting. I think your sexual ethics will also, disqualify you. And nowadays, even just kind of what political leanings you have, sure. you know, may disqualify you. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I really was blessed by that point because it even as a reminder to me that, like, our church, True North, has a lot of growing to do, too. I think implicitly we still carry a lot of those, you know, hindrances in our mind, right? We think that they're badges of honor, but ultimately they're hindrances to the gospel. Like, for example, I know, and this is something I struggle with, let's say a homeless person or someone that was, you know, mentally ill walked into church, like, how do you treat them? And oftentimes I think it's a good indicator of where you stand with these practices and how you view people as just people. So I was really blessed by that point too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the more we think about it, like, when we read the gospels and we see who Jesus accepted and, you know, and who the Pharisees rejected.
Yeah.
We are much more similar to the practices of the Pharisees than we are to Jesus.
Totally. No, totally. I was even speaking on how, like, not that this isn't the case, but, you know, these times, like, the hot topic is racial justice, which it should be. And Jesus does talk about that too. But Jesus really, I think, more adamantly talks about the socioeconomic principles that are at hand and that we often, you know, even the woke ignore, right?
Yeah.
A pastor friend put it well where it's like, yeah, now Rolf Lauren will put in, like, a black guy in their ads, but you'll never see someone from the ghetto dressed like that, you know? Like, it's different. But anyway, I was really enjoying that point. The second point, which probably is a little more controversial part of the passage and a little bit trickier, was when he talked about the misguided vow, when Jephthah, in his own pride, kind of said, hey, whatever comes out of the tent, I will offer as a sacrifice, and it ultimately was his daughter. I guess one, you know, sub point I wanted to ask you, and we can edit this out too if you feel uncomfortable, but I think theologically, I do know a lot of people reading passages like that get uncomfortable. Like, how could God allow this to happen? This is the reason why I don't want to, you know, worship the God of the Old Testament. That's something I hear often too. And I guess for you, like, before even diving to the point, is there any, you know, you talked about it a little bit too, but why does God even allow Jephthah to do that in your mind? Like, why doesn't God intervene at that moment and say, hey, that's a messed up thing to do. That's child sacrifice.
Yeah, I think this can definitely, you know, snowball down to a much larger topic, you know, the whole idea of the existence of evil and how God could, a good God, can allow evil to exist.
Yeah.
And especially when you kind of put this story next to the story of Abraham and Isaac, and you see God intervene at the very last minute.
Yeah.
You know, but though there are some similarities, the main differences is, number one, God was testing Abraham by asking him to sacrifice Isaac. Here, God never even speaks and demands any kind of sacrifice from Jephthah.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of times when we read passages like this, people might assume that God was ordaining this, you know, and obviously in God's providence and his sovereignty, nothing is outside of his control. But also as free agents, we are in the, we have the ability to make these choices of living according to God's laws or not living according to God's laws.
Yeah.
And this narrative is not a prescriptive text, meaning it's not something that teaches us these are the step-by-steps of how we ought to live, but it's a narrative, so it's a description of historical events. Yeah. So what in this passage was describing is the sinfulness and the pride of Jephthah, not the inability of God to step in to stop something like this. And when we read stories like this, I think it highlights even much more the grace of God, that even when we as human beings are this, you know, twisted and sinful, that he would still sacrifice his son for our salvation.
Yeah, no, I find that really helpful. I really like that. I think that point was really helpful, at least for me too, descriptive versus prescriptive. And I always put it this way, like, instances like this, when you're offended or feel like, man, this is wrong, we'll always see what happens to that person that's committing that act, right? Because, like, you know, I know people bring up, like, polygamy, like, how could God allow it in the Old Testament? It's like, well, if you carefully look at Abraham's life when he commits polygamy, well, what happens? And I think it describes a horrible life. And it's like, maybe God's allowing these things to happen in Scripture to show us this is what happens when we follow our own leanings. And
For sure.
Yeah, I guess, know, if, go ahead.
Yeah, no, just even like to kind of add to that point, when you think about the sin of Abraham and Sarah, and Sarah, you know, kind of forcing Abraham to sleep with Hagar to, you know, get an heir.
Yeah.
You know, and then when we look at kind of the conflict in the Middle East right now, it's it's generational, right? Yeah. The whole reason why they're fighting it, it's the sons of Ishmael versus the sons of Isaac. Yeah. You know, like that wouldn't have happened if you know, Sarah didn't commit that sin, Sarah and Abraham. So it describes the consequences of sin when we really carefully follow some of these things that we might question in the Bible.
Yeah. No, I really like that. I guess like an application question I wanted to quickly ask with this point was, maybe it's not as obscene as today, which I think is a point. Like we get offended at this passage, but I think your point is, look, we do this all the time, right?
Yeah.
At that time, the daughter was kind of the pride of that family. And I think the main point wasn't just that she's a human child, but that's also Jephthah's like offspring, right? Which was huge in that time. And I think for us today, like one question I want to ask you is like, well, how do you see, you said that pride is the main kind of downfall in this story. Like, how do you see that type of situation playing out today? What are the sacrifices people make today instead of their firstborn daughter?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Like, we may not offer up our children on a physical altar and we may not burn them and disembowel them and, sacrifice them as a burnt offering to God.
Yeah.
But many children are being sacrificed daily.
For sure.
By parents.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's our inability to let go of the idol of our own successes at the cost of what? At the cost of the detriment of your children being raised in an ungodly way. Yeah. You know, like there's the sacrifices that we make where we choose the worldly culture over godly commands. You know, simple things as such as like obeying the Sabbath, where we ourselves don't place a high priority in worshiping God on a weekly basis, and instead we teach our kids what it means to play sports on Sunday. You know what I mean? There's like so many, and I'm saying that as my own son plays flag football on Sundays. You know what I mean? Like, so there's all these things where I think practically, we think that we don't fall under these narratives, but we have so much more in common. You know, I think we sacrifice our children. I think we sacrifice our families. I think we sacrifice our friendships. We sacrifice our covenant with God to follow after Him.
Yeah.
All to gain kind of the idols of this world.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that point. I think the Judges isn't a text to be like offended by, but it's a text that just shows us the cycles of our sins even today. I think you're head on. Like, we sacrifice our marriages, our friendships all the time. For Jephthah, it was for the pride of the people of Israel. For us, it's the pride of your company, maybe, or the pride of a salary. And I think that's so true. So.
And, when we think about, like, the great stories that we get enamored with, whether it's, like, Game of Thrones or Breaking Bad, like, the premise of the shows are absolutely ridiculous, right? I mean, Game of Thrones is completely fantasy.
Yeah.
But the reason why we're so drawn to it is because politically and racially speaking, it's really just a commentary on our own culture, right?
Totally.
Breaking Bad, like the whole premise of a science teacher becoming a meth dealer, like for the sake of gaining absolute power, like that, that aspect seems kind of far-fetched. But when you look at the core of that story, it's really dealing with the power hungry and the desire for money that we all struggle with.
Yeah.
And the same way, when we read these Old Testament passages, especially Judges, we go, man, this is so far-fetched, right? But at the core of these stories are still the like the exposing of human nature and its sinfulness. And I think when we can really kind of pinpoint that, we realize how actually relatable and how applicable these narratives are to our current lives even now, thousands of years later. Yeah,
no, I totally agree. And I think you wrapped it up really well, which I think, people might accuse yourself or even myself that our third point is always the same every sermon, but there's a reason. And I think Judges is a really good reason that this all points to the humble sacrifice on the cross. Right. And I guess just lastly, like, I might ask this a lot during these postscript episodes, but I think especially with this episode of Jephthah, like, what are ways we can be reminded of that sacrifice on the cross amidst us trying to sacrifice so much of our own selves on whatever altar? Like, I think that's so key to like kind of fighting the sins of Jephthah that we see in our lives, and how maybe some simple reminders on how to do that in our own everyday lives.
you know, by God's timing and sovereignty, I joined one of the community groups on Fridays, on this past Friday, and the group was going over a devotional book, and the particular chapter that that they were going over was a chapter on prayer, and how prayer allows us to really humbly submit our will to God's will, and I think a very practical application to how we can be reminded of God's humble sacrifice is when we actually take the time to discipline ourselves in prayer, and not just prayers of supplications, you know, like prayers of like, hey, this is what I need from you, God, but really following the model that Christ gives us, where he prays in the garden of, you know, hey, may this cup pass from me, but not as I will, but as your will, you know? And I think when we pray in that manner and seek to humbly submit to God's will, we will see just how important and real the sacrifice of Jesus is for our salvation. And I think that's just one practical application I can think of.
No, I think that's really good. I'm reading actually Judges 11 really quickly. I'm reminded when you said that I think you mentioned God's particularly absent in this story, and it probably started a chain of events in Judges. But when I'm looking at it too, like, I also realize that Jephthah never really reached out to God in conversation. He's like one of the first judges to kind of do things on his own, which I think is a really good reminder of that same point. So yeah, well, we hope you were blessed by the sermon, even this episode, just kind of recapping the sermon. We're going to repeat this one more time too, but we are planning on having indoor services on June 20th. I know that's Father's Day, but that'll be back at Glen High School in the Spangenberg Theater. So just have that marked in your calendars. We'll have more information to come really shortly on all that. But other than that, we hope you're blessed by this episode and by this past Sunday's worship.
All right, have a good week, everybody.